Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel on the internet. We have a big show today, so let's get straight to the docket. First, big news from the court in Minneapolis regarding the four officers charged in the death of George Floyd. What does it mean? Second, a very suspicious case in Florida. Third, another teacher is going to prison. Fourth, the Walter Wallace body cam video has been released from Philadelphia. Fifth, a man who kidnapped Tekashi 6ix9ine has been sentenced. Not every arrest is unlawful. And a crime boss's family sues the United States government over his death. And finally, the dumb criminal contestant of the day. You have got to hear this to believe it. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. First, if you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button as well as that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. We have a busy docket today. First, big news on the case out of Minneapolis, Minnesota regarding the four former police officers charged in the death of George Floyd. And that big ruling is they will all be tried in a single proceeding, which will be televised despite the prosecutors not consenting to any audio or video coverage in the courtroom. The order was released late last night by Judge Peter Cahill, and he also denied requests of the defendants Derek Chauvin, Tao Tao, J. Alexander Koenig, and Thomas Lane to have the trial moved out of Minneapolis. All four defendants had previously argued that remaining in the city would violate the Sixth Amendment right to a fair proceeding due to the amount of pre-trial exposure. Now, in allowing the proceedings to be televised, Cahill reasoned that the defendants' Sixth Amendment right to a fair trial ran concurrent with the general public's First Amendment right to access to public trials. Interesting analysis, but I think the judge got it correct. I am a big advocate of courts and the proceedings going on in the courts being televised. It's the best way for the truth to come out when people can actually look at it, hear it for their own eyes, and not get some talking head's version, which is slanted or skewed for one particular side. The truth is always the best source of information. Under Judge Cahill's order, audio and video recordings, broadcasting, and live streaming will be allowed in the courtroom, with only matters that are on the record being subject to audio coverage. That makes sense. If there's something not on the record, it doesn't need to be televised. The court's going to allow three video cameras that may be installed in the trial courtroom, one in the back of the courtroom facing the witness stand, one on the wall behind the jury box, and one on or near the bench facing the lectern where counsel will conduct their witness examination. The cameras cannot be moved from their fixed positions for obvious reasons. We don't want to show the jurors in this particular case. I have said this before. The jurors in this case are going to have a big decision to make. Their identities should remain secret so that they can make a decision based on the evidence or the lack thereof in this particular case. The court's orders today were based upon a hearing that was set last Friday regarding whether there was going to be a joint trial. Now we know there will be. But the defense had all argued that we have inconsistent theories of defenses, which is basically they're all going to be pointing their fingers at each other. Specifically, the attorneys for defendants Lane, Koenig, and Tao are anticipated to argue that Chauvin committed the crime on his own. The prosecutor simply said that they were working in concert together, therefore they should all be held accountable. The biggest argument that the prosecutor had for keeping the trials together was that it was all basically the same evidence coming in against each other. The biggest argument the prosecutors put forth to the court for a single trial was the mere argument of judicial economy. Judge, it'd be really burdensome on the family as well as the court system and the prosecutors, not to have to do just one trial, but to do four. Where have we heard that argument before? That's right, Lori Vallow, Chad DeBell matter, right? This doesn't mean that as the evidence gets presented at trial or further offers of proof are made, that the defense will still continue to move for severance. Now, severance is something that you have to move for early and often, and you have to make a record for it. Otherwise, it is waived on appeal. So literally at the start of every trial proceeding, the defendants should each move for severance. Every time there's a bench trial, move for severance. Otherwise, it is deemed waived. I once had a trial with multiple co-defendants. I moved for severance literally every time I went to the bench, every time I got up and spoke, and it resulted in a hung jury twice. And then, right as we're getting ready to start the third trial, suddenly the district attorney thought that there was going to be a good argument for severance. And I said, I object to severance because nothing has changed other than now the district attorney wanted a separate trial. So you got to be consistent, ladies and gentlemen. Prosecutors can get a little sneaky sometimes when they do this type of thing, but the defense is out there holding their feet to the fire for sure. Now, one thing that we have to remember on this George Floyd case is this case will now be prosecuted simply by the Attorney General's office, who is run by Keith Ellison. And that is because early on, the county prosecutors in this particular case held a one-on-one meeting with the coroner in regards to the George Floyd matter. Now, this is a very teachable moment. When I go interview witnesses, I always bring an investigator with me. And the reason for that is if I take all my notes and the witness gets on the stand and says something differently, I cannot effectively impeach that witness by saying, well, isn't it true you told me this when we interviewed you? And they say, no, that's it. So you always bring a third party who can be there to be called as an impeachment witness. In this particular case, and the Judge Cahill, at the time that he disqualified the county attorneys, called it sloppy for him to have held a meeting with the prosecutor one-on-one without a third party there taking notes or something along those lines. Why? Because then the prosecutor was the only witness to that conversation, and guess what? They're now a witness. And you can't be a witness in the case that you are involved with as an attorney. So therefore, you're disqualified. We'll have to see how that case continues to play out. Certainly, that's going to be a trial worth watching for everyone. The primary defense in this particular case is going to be a lot of blaming. You're going to have the defendants blaming Chauvin. You're going to have Chauvin blaming the deceased Mr. Floyd by saying that he was a drug addict who was overdosing, and Chauvin's going to blame the other officers who had first contact with Mr. Floyd, basically saying that if you had correctly diagnosed what the circumstances were, then maybe I would have done it differently, but since you failed me, I failed Mr. Floyd, and therefore it's just tragedy, but not criminally responsible. That's what the defense is going to argue. It's going to be interesting to watch. Next on the docket, a suspicious case in Florida. Now, no names are being released, but apparently in Stuart, Florida, a Florida man thought that he heard an intruder outside his bedroom door, and instead actually turned out it was his wife, his pregnant wife, and he wound up fatally shooting her. The shooting occurred about 1:30 a.m. on Wednesday morning when the woman's husband heard a noise outside the bedroom door in their home in Stuart, Florida. The man apparently told the detectives he didn't realize his wife was not in the room, and he frantically called 911 and told dispatchers he had accidentally shot his wife. The woman was taken to the hospital, but she was pronounced dead. Apparently, the husband is cooperating with the police, and he gave a pretty in-depth statement and state simply that he awoke in the middle of the night, thought he heard somebody in the house, and basically shot first, asked questions later. The deputies also said that a 2-year-old child was in the home when the shooting occurred, but no names are being released pursuant to a local ordinance which does not allow the police to release the names to protect victims. Obviously, we don't know these individuals, and I don't want to speculate too much, but I think we have all awoken in the middle of the night when you thought you heard a noise. And whether you have a baseball bat or a firearm or simply a phone, I think most people would probably look over and see, is my loved one, my wife, okay? I don't think I would immediately get up and just shoot. Doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me, but maybe that's exactly the way it went down. Do we think there's something more to this particular case, or is this just a tragic accident? Let me know in the comments below. Next on the docket, another teacher goes to jail. And what, pray tell, could the teacher be going to jail for? That's right, having sex with students. And in this particular case, Whitley Mizell, she's 32, and she had entered a plea of guilty. And now she's been sentenced to 10 years in prison, but she's ordered that she spend 2 years of that 10 behind bars, and then she'll have a period of supervised release. If she violates her probation, she's gonna go to prison for 10 years. Ms. Mizell was indicted in July of 2019 on charges of having sex with two students. And this was at the St. Clair County School District where she was hired as a substitute teacher. Needless to say, when the allegations were concluded, needless to say, Ms. Mizell will not be teaching anyone under the age of 18 anytime soon. Now, how would one know that Ms. Mizell was a convicted sex offender in the future? Well, what would you do? You'd want to go to crimetalksearch.com, run a search. If somebody was looking to be friends with or maybe engage in a business relationship with Mizell, and these types of things would come up because she's going to be a sex offender and she has a felony criminal record at this point. But when you sign up for the background subscription service at crimetalksearch.com, you're also going to get information regarding emails, phone numbers, and social media associated with that person, along with records of property ownership, civil judgments, bankruptcies, marital records, and divorce records. Those are the type of things that everybody wants to know when they're just going to get started in a relationship with anyone, whether it's a personal relationship, whether it is a business relationship, you want to know who are you dealing with. Go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, the Walter Wallace body cam has been released. Now, you didn't get a whole lot of news about the rioting that took place in Philadelphia last week, but it was in regards to the shooting death of Walter Wallace. He was 27 years old. And there'd been some video released, and that was from a bystander's point of view. The body cam video of the officer involved has been released. Now, the family said that the father of seven, that's right, Mr. Wallace was 27 and had seven children, and he was suffering from a mental health crisis. You will not find anyone more sympathetic to someone with mental health issues. I have represented many, many people over the years that have had mental health issues, but you have to be able to seek treatment for that. You have to follow your doctor's advice to do that because it is not a pass. It is not a free ride from criminal responsibility. Now, the officers state that they received a call regarding a man screaming and claiming to be armed with a knife. And it did turn out, and you'll be able to see it because we're going to put a link to it, that Mr. Wallace did in fact have a knife. Attorneys for the Wallace family simply said that the cops should have used other tools available to them. They argue that all you want to do is incapacitate him long enough to get him under control, but the family alleges that they're not pushing for murder charges against the officers who shot Wallace. He construed the shooting death as an institutional failure. The family has construed the shooting death as an institutional failure, which is code for we'd like to be paid lots of money. The family alleges that the officers were improperly trained and didn't have the proper equipment to effectuate their job, which is code for the city's responsible, please pay us a lot of money. So we're going to put a link up to this video and please take a look at it. Was this lawful or lawful but unlawful? That's the bottom line. Mr. Wallace did have a knife. He was being told to stop and he wasn't. And police officers are trained that when they feel their life or that of another is in danger, that they can eliminate that threat. We'll see if any charges are going to be brought. Don't think they're going to be, but I'm sure the city of Philadelphia will be writing a check to the family shortly. Next on the docket, the man who kidnapped Tekashi 6ix9ine has been sentenced. Yes, those of you who've been watching Crime Talk for a while have known about Tekashi 6ix9ine for quite a while. That's right, also known as Daniel Hernandez. Well, a man has been sentenced in New York federal court as part of the government's attempt to take down a very large gang in New York. The defendant in this particular case, Anthony Harve Ellison, is getting 288 months in federal prison because he was convicted of kidnapping Daniel Hernandez, aka rapper Tekashi 6ix9ine. That's roughly 24 years, ladies and gentlemen. Now, Mr. Ellison was a high-ranking member of the Nine Trey Gangster Bloods, a violent gang that wreaked havoc across New York City. And he was convicted of racketeering, kidnapping, and a violent assault with a dangerous weapon, according to the United States Attorney's Office there in the Southern District of New York. Prosecutors alleged that the Nine Trey gang was involved in crimes ranging from shootings to drug dealings. Shocking. Street gangs doing that? Who would have thought of such a thing? When old Tekashi 6ix9ine testified in criminal court last year, it was against the gang. Now, remember, basically, Tekashi 6ix9ine, after he testified, took a plea, spent a little more time in custody, and immediately got out and was waving bands of money out there and putting out new hits. And now he's completely off of his supervised release because he was one of the star witnesses against the gang. At the trial, old Tekashi 6ix9ine said that he joined the gang for clout, because if you're a rapper, gangster rapper, you need to have that street cred, so you might as well be a part of a street gang. Although he claims he was never initiated, because if he had actually been initiated, he apparently wouldn't have rolled so quickly. But as we've said before, the threat of imminent incarceration tends to break the bonds of loyalty, and let's face it, Tekashi 6ix9ine is rich. He likes his lifestyle, as you can see from his videos that he puts out. And he thought, you know what? I like my wealthy lifestyle. I don't think I want to spend my life in a box for a cell for a gang that basically kidnapped me when I got mad at them for spending all of my money. And that's how Mr. Ellison, along with another man, came to kidnap Mr. Tekashi 6ix9ine in July of 2018. That made him renounce his involvement with the gang. Hernandez at one point did in fact face 47 years in prison for racketeering, but he reached that plea agreement where he was sentenced to 2 years in prison with 13 months for time served. Like I said, he's been released and he is out. So old Tekashi 6ix9ine, you're a free man. And everybody always says, I'll never snitch, I'll never roll on my gang. They always do. The threat of imminent incarceration tends to break the bonds of loyalty, ladies and gentlemen. Always remember that. That's why in those big cases that the United States attorneys bring, they indict everybody, and they know somebody is the weakest link, and they just work up from there. Not every arrest is unlawful. Take a look at this video. A Texas man screams for his father during what some people are describing as a violent arrest that went down at his parents' front door. And it was all recorded on the Ring doorbell. Now, a gentleman by the name of Zeke Rayford pulled into his driveway. And you can hear the police officers telling him to get down and on the ground, but he runs for the door. Now, the officers gave chase and Rayford started yelling for his dad before the police took him down by kneeling and tasing him. Now, the police officers attempted to stop Mr. Rayford for running a traffic light. Instead, they say he kept driving until he got home to his parents. And as you can see from the video, he gets out of the car and instead of just talking to the police officers, probably taking his ticket for going through the stop sign, what does he do? He runs. And game on from there. And I'm not saying that he is right or wrong, but I'm telling you, if you believe that you have been the subject of an illegal contact or arrest, You don't get to decide it by running or assaulting the police officers. You have to go to court and have that issue resolved by a judge at motions hearings or ultimately by a jury. You don't get to run, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to get into whether it was absolutely appropriate for the officers to tase Mr. Rayford, but as you can see from the video, the officers are not apologetic whatsoever when confronted by the father of Mr. Rayford, and he's like, "You betcha I tased him. He was resisting." Another thing you can't do. If it's an unlawful arrest, you go along with it and you fight it in court. That's your unsolicited legal advice for the day, ladies and gentlemen. Next on the docket, a crime boss who passed away in custody. Now his family wants to sue the federal government for not protecting him. That's right. The family members of Boston crime boss James Whitey Bulger have filed a lawsuit against the Federal Bureau of Prisons and 30 unnamed employees of the prison system for failing to protect Bulger, who was beaten to death at a prison in West Virginia. The family filed a lawsuit against the prison system last week, 2 years after Bulger, 89 at the time, was killed at the United States Penitentiary, Hazleton, a federal prison in West Virginia's Preston County. Bulger died the same day, and he was transferred from there from another prison. The lawsuit alleges that the prison system failed to protect Bulger by moving him to Hazleton, a prison with constant inmate violence. And the family also alleges that the prison system was aware that Bulger was labeled a snitch and that he was perhaps the most well-known inmate incarcerated since Al Capone, but yet did not do enough to shield him from other inmates. Needless to say, the Federal Bureau of Prisons didn't respond, but I assure you they will deny the allegations. Now, for those of you who do not know, Mr. Bulger was the leader of the Winter Hill Gang, an Irish-American organized crime operation that ran loan sharking, gambling, and drug rackets in South Boston. The catch was, he was also an FBI informant who snitched on the New England mob, his gang's main rival at the time, in an era when bringing down the mafia was the top national priority for the FBI. Now, people think that people in gangs don't cooperate or snitch on the other side. Happens all the time. Well, Mr. Bulger became one of the nation's most wanted fugitives after fleeing Boston in late 1994. And after more than 16 years, Bulger was captured at 81 in Santa Monica, California. And he was later convicted in 2013 for participating in 11 murders as well as a sundry of other crimes. Bulger was moved to the West Virginia prison after being initially housed in Florida and in Tucson, Arizona, two prisons known for protecting inmates who may have been at risk because of their crimes. And according to the family, predictably, within hours of his placement in general population there at Hazleton, inmates believed to be from New England and who are alleged to have mafia ties or loyalties killed Mr. James Bulger Jr., utilizing methods that included the use of a lock in a sock-type weapon. The family is seeking damages for Bulger's physical and emotional pain and suffering, as well as his wrongful death. Do you think that Mr. Bulger's family is entitled to a penny? Let me know in the comments below. Next on the docket, we have our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And the last couple of days, we have people that have truly been on the cutting edge of stupidity. Now we have an Idaho man who's not only had to pay a fine, but he has been blacklisted by the Yellowstone National Park authorities after attempting to cook chicken in the hot springs in an off-limits thermal area. Apparently, rangers were alerted to the hydrothermal hot pot after receiving a report of people hiking towards the Shoshone Geyser Basin. That's the park's largest geyser region. Apparently, this individual had cooking pots in tow, and a subsequent investigation revealed two whole birds in a burlap sack resting in a hot spring with cookware nearby. Unknown Idaho Falls native has been ordered to pay a $1,200 fine for violating closure and use limits, and he has to serve 2 years of unsupervised probation. One of the reasons for having laws is that it's to not only protect, in this particular case, the geysers or other people, but it's to protect you from yourself. And oftentimes when sentencing comes around, one of the principles of sentencing is not only to deter you from doing such things, but to deter others who are aware of your conduct. So hopefully this Idaho man who's been unidentified, but we'll do what we can to find him if he wins, to get him his Crime Talk mug if he's the winner of the week, will realize that you can't go into Yellowstone and cook things. Because we've already had people there who have tried similar things in the past. Back in 2001, a Seattle TV host was fined after digging an impromptu barbecue pit in a thermal area to demonstrate how natural heat could cook chicken. There's also prohibition against people placing objects in the hot springs or staying off marked trails because it's hot and people could get hurt. In fact, the water reaches 143 degrees Fahrenheit, which could actually cause burns. And despite this risk, apparently every year people do that. In fact, a three-year-old was badly burned in October after plunging into scalding hot water near the site. And in 2016, an Oregon man perished after trying to use one of the geothermal vents as a jacuzzi. So, ladies and gentlemen, our dumb criminal contestant of the day is our unidentified man from Idaho who wants to cook chickens in the thermals. You can't make this stuff up. You simply cannot make it up. Thanks for watching. Leave me a comment below. Do you think it's going to be an interesting trial for the four officers in Minneapolis? I think it's going to be. What do you think about that death in Florida? Little suspicious or just a terrible accident? And obviously, let me know about the young man in Texas who was tased. Was he justified or completely wrong? Leave me a comment below. Have a great day. Thanks for watching Crime Talk.